Hello and welcome to the Sonic Cinema Podcast. My name is Brian Scuttle. Thank you for joining me at www.sonic-cinema.com, as well as wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Good Pods, the Sonic Cinema Podcast YouTube channel, which includes several quick take videos as well. You can click subscribe, rate, and review, and it is always appreciated when you do, and when you let your feelings be known on the podcasts or quick take reviews that I share wherever you listen to the podcast or wherever you check out my work. You can also check us out at patreon.com/sonic cinema. I'm still working on getting Leaving the Collection and Life soundtrack back on track. Hopefully in June I will be able to do that, but for now it is still appreciated when you subscribe to that and check out things such as the coverage for our subject today that you would find at the Patreon, and that's at patreon.com/sonic cinema. Earlier this month, we wrapped another Atlanta Film Festival. This is the sixth year I've been at the festival, and now what I want to do is kind of, now that I've had about a few weeks to catch my breath from the festival, want to take stock in the movies that I saw, and as well as share the red carpet interviews from the festival that I have for you. And this was, it's funny, and I wrote about this somewhat in my closing piece for Sonic Cinema on the festival. Overall, there were a lot of films that I really kind of loved, but there were also a lot of films that I felt were just fine. I didn't think they were anything particularly rich or in depth about them, but I understood why they were part of the festival, and I, you know, they were good, but I mean, I didn't think they really elevated this edition of the festival in a way that I have kind of felt has been the case in some of the past years of the festival. Sort of remind me of my first time covering the festival in 2019, where I there were films that I loved, and then there were kind of everything else, which, you know, everything else I kind of enjoyed watching, but at the same time, I didn't necessarily get a jolt of exhilaration from. And that was, it was a bit of a surprise for this one, because there are films that I think are kind of fascinating, and there were a couple that I will go and talk about that I do want to see again. For a variety of reasons, I had a hard time staying awake through them. One was, I saw The TV Glow, which I stayed awake for, but was still a tough, it was still a really tough, kind of glacially paced movie for me. I didn't quite get the energy off of it that a lot of people did. That said, I do want to rewatch it because of the fact that I want to give it another chance, because the ideas in the movie I thought were fascinating, and the images are fascinating, and I want to try to watch it outside of the film festival context and see if I feel differently about it. And then the other one is a French-Canadian thriller called Red Rooms, about a woman who is fascinated by a serial killer case in Canada. And we see her go to the trial, and we're trying to figure out why she is going to the trial. That one I did fall asleep during. It was after a long day of work, and I had a hard time, staying awake. And it was one of those things where I just had a difficulty in, I just had a difficult time staying awake, but by the second hour, I was absolutely transfixed. So that one I have not officially reviewed. I did a quick take video of it, but I don't consider that a review. It just is talking about my thoughts on the film. I haven't actually officially rated it yet. And I hope it is made available sometime in the near future because of the fact that I would love to rewatch and see how I feel about it in, again, away from the film festival context. This was a year of... This was a very different year. For the third year in a row, I was really batting up against work. Unlike at Regal, for the most part, I was able to not really have work interfere with my attending the film festival. There was just one occasion on May 4th where that was the case, but at the same time, I will be able to watch the feature that I missed, Sing Sing, later on in the year, and then I was able to catch up with the animated shorts that I missed from that particular block during the virtual catalog. So the only thing I missed there was the red carpet. And again, I wrote about that in my blog. But what I want to do is I want to highlight the movies that really resonated with me. And there were quite a few. And I probably one of the best films of the fest and one that will stay with me is the first one that I ended up watching for the fest. And it was through Screener. And I saw it in the lead up to the festival, and I ended up writing about for In Their Own League, and it is the documentary Atsikame Ku Sons by Chloe Lerich. And it is a documentary about a First Nation community in Quebec who is devastated after the loss of 5 young members of their community. And that devastation is even more pronounced with the apathy that the white justice system shows towards their loss. And it was an absolutely harrowing film to watch. It was a haunting film, and it's a film that I think if we really watch the film, if we really consider what happened to Native American Native communities as white people started to encroach onto North America, I think we are long overdue for a reckoning of what happened. And I think this movie could be an essential way of getting into that. And it's inspired by it's based on a true story. So it's a documentary, but also has a lot of elements of performed pieces from 1970, so it's not just archival footage or documentary footage. And the way it uses narrative and documentary storytelling devices is quite powerful. And it was by far it was an amazing way to start the festival for me. Another film that I just absolutely adored was A Strange Path. And this one was directed by Guto Parente and is about a young filmmaker who goes home to Brazil almost right as COVID hits. And he finds himself home and trying to resolve his issues with his father. And the ways it does that are quite unusual and quite beautiful and quite striking. And the way this story was told really spoke to me in a very profound manner. And it's one of my favorite films of the year, honestly, right now, as far as how it approaches its subject and the way it looks at how a young man reconciles his relationship with his father. And it takes a very, quote, to quote the title, strange path to doing that. And it was a beautiful film to watch. The opening night film was Michael Showalter's The Idea of You. And that is a film based on a book. It's basically about a 40-something mother played by Anne Hathaway who has a fling with a 20-something boy band singer. And it's about the chaos that continues as that relationship takes hold. It was overall was an entertaining movie. I didn't think it was a great movie, but I still enjoyed it. The performances are fantastic. It was the first red carpet of the festival, and I had a chance to talk to Michael Showalter a bit about the film at the red carpet, and here are those thoughts.
Hi, how are you?
Hello. Welcome to Atlanta.
It's great to be here. We shot this movie in Atlanta.
What inspired you to want to tell this story?
I'm just a big fan of romantic films. I love these characters and this story, and excited to work with great actors, Anne Hathaway, and yeah.
Were there any particular challenges that you had along the way?
Well, as I said, we shot this film in Atlanta, and it's set in Los Angeles and New York, and we're in Coachella, and we go all over Europe, and so to be able to do all that here and to have people not know that is something I'm really proud of. It looks great. The movie looks great. Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
In addition to Showalter, they had some of the crew there because it was an Atlanta-based film, and they're actually here working on pre-production for another Showalter film, and they also had cinematographer Jim Frona here, and I had a chance to talk to him for a little bit as well, and here are those thoughts. What is one of the things that, as a DP, gets you interested in taking on a particular project?
That's a good question. First of all, I will say part of it is, do I respond to the script? Of course, right. That's a big part of it. It's also who the director is, who's going to be like the person I get to collaborate with and create this world with, right?
Mm-hmm.
But all in all, I like movies that are about real people's real feelings and, like, you could say struggles, but, like, this is a romantic comedy, but it also has a lot of heart and depth to it.
Yeah.
And it is about, like, how do we, can we stay connected despite the total differences in their, where they're in their lives kind of thing.
Right.
So for me, it is about the humanity of something. Like, I can laugh, but I want to feel.
Yeah.
So I need to have both things in order for me to say yes to something, if
okay.
that makes sense.
When you are thinking about lighting for a project like this, this is supposed to be relatively grounded.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any particular things that you have to keep in mind as far as keeping it relatively realistic or authentic?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that Michael, the director, and I talked about was, yes, it's a romantic comedy, but as you're saying, we wanted it to feel like it's taking place in the real world, or it's very grounded. And so the filmmaking style was very naturalistic. My lighting style was very natural. So you feel like even though, you know, in the occasion where we might have a set that we built, that the light is coming through the windows just like it would in a real apartment or hotel room, for example. And so it's those kind of decisions that even when we're, you know, making make believe that like the lighting can help support the idea that it's like it's actual daylight as opposed to
right.
You know,
of course,
and theatrical. And so you know these movies can. Romantic comedies, when you think about them, can feel like they're very heightened or kind of glossy, and that was something that we didn't want for this movie. Again, it was like to root it in the real world.
Okay.
Even though we've got Anne Hathaway as the lead, you know, it's
right.
Like, so that so, and the important thing of that is that in the story, she is a single mother, teenage daughter, and she gets whisked away into the world of like boy bands. So you needed to have the contrast too between her world and the kind of high octane, super, you know, like everything's larger than life when she gets, you know, whisked away with this guy Hayes. So it was also, story wise, it also made a lot of sense. So like, let's okay. ground ourselves here so we can enjoy the journey into the Land of Oz kind of thing.
Are there any particular movies that you and Michael talked about that kind of inspired how you approach this?
I'm trying to think because we're actually prepping a new movie here now, so my brain is in that one, so I'm trying to remember what we talked about because this was like a year and a half ago. I can't honestly remember.
Okay. Well, that's all right.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
I hope you enjoy.
The weekend from there, by far the most impactful films I saw were the film Thelma with June Squibb. And it was a just absolutely hilarious and engaging film. It looks at a 90-year-old woman who is scammed out of money, and she sets out to find the person who did it. And so it has action beats, it has adventure beats. But also what it does is it really looks at aging, the difficulties of aging, as well as the difficulties of being a caregiver sometimes. And it's really a lovely film, and I loved it. It's probably the film that I love the most in terms of the enjoyment of the experience. And the audience was completely on board with it, and I think it could be a tremendous hit moving forward, as far as box office potential. I can see it being very much a sleeper. The other film that I saw that weekend that really connected with me was The Body Politic, which is about a young mayor in Baltimore who's trying to do the difficult task of lowering gun violence in the city of Baltimore, and trying to do it in a way that has not really been done in this city before. We had a chance to have the director, as well as one of the people in the film there for a Q&A afterwards. And if you read my review, you know there was one quote in the Q&A that really resonated with me. And it was, "We believe more in the power over others than in the power with others." And I will admit, I've been very disillusioned by the discussion of politics online over the past year. And that quote really kind of gets to why. And I think that as a community on social media, I think a lot of people are more concerned about feeling superior over others than working with others and having a dialogue with others. And it's really had me very cynical about the political hope. And I get it, because we are in some of the most politically divisive times we've seen in the country's history, with MAGA, with conspiracy theories, with Trump, with online social media discussion, with everything going on in the world, and a sense that our political leaders are not doing anything in our best interests, but in their best interests. And I think there's a lot of truth to it, certainly. But I also feel like we lose something of our shared humanity with other people, especially other people in our similar situations, when we stop trying to talk to one another and care more about talking about one another and showing our superiority to one another. And that may be an idealistic way of looking at it, certainly, but at the same time, I think that the way it is really manifested is quite toxic, and it's really kind of forced me to pull back from some social media. I'm not on Twitter as much as I used to, and that's part of why, because of the fact that everything is just so absolutely abhorrent. I mean, to where even people I fundamentally agree with, I think it's not as fun to engage with them because of the way we're engaging with one another. And the body politic really, and that Q&A in particular, really spoke to me in terms of why that is the case. And the film, it's funny because of the fact that we'll talk about it later, but there's another film that played at the festival. It was kind of about similar ideas, also approaching a very different way, and we'll talk about that more when we get there. Throughout the week, it was a balancing of work and screenings. We also had the screening of The Fall Guy, which we ended up watching. And then but on Wednesday of the festival, we got a documentary about Atlanta hip hop and kind of the history of Atlanta hip hop and why it has been so impactful. It was produced by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. It's called The South Got Something to Say. Several of the artists and people who were in the documentary were at the festival, and there was a big red carpet for it. And I had a chance to talk to one of the directors, Tyson Horn, about who he and his brother Ryan directed the documentary. And it was really interesting to hear his thoughts on making this documentary, and I hope you enjoy what he had to say.
When you venture on a project like this, when you have the limitations of feature film length, how challenging was it to decide how much depth to go into with this subject, and how you even stop talking about this subject?
Yeah, I think it's funny because Ryan, he's the primary editor on the film, and what happened is we tried to let the artists tell their story, and one of the things that we wanted to do was show how everybody in Atlanta kind of worked together seamlessly to some degree, and so we let their voices help navigate what we needed to put in, what we needed to leave in, and then allowing them to be able to speak their story allowed us to know where we were going to go with it. And we had something special in the beginning with the prayer from Goody. So we knew our ending. And at that point, it was just a matter of getting to that ending. And so that's how we constructed everything. So it is hard to, because everybody in Atlanta, we've only touched base, like, you know, it's like a tip of the iceberg type thing. So there's so many other artists that we could have talked to, but we were limited based on the schedule. It was a summer of the 50th year of anniversary of hip hop. So that caused a lot of people to not be available.
Right.
And that's ultimately the reason why some people are not in there that would have been in there as Atlanta staples.
What is the most important thing for you, for people to take away from this movie when it comes to Atlanta's contribution to hip-hop?
I think the one thing I would hope that people take away from it is people in Atlanta's willingness to work with each other, their ability to help each other and help lift each other up. You know, just the way all the music came about, it was a community effort and it was a community involvement. So even with this film, the community, the hip-hop community, music community here in Atlanta, they all lent themselves to the project just based on the strength of like how we work together with each other. We all kind of know each other and lift each other up, not so much where it's so much opposition or trying to tear each other down.
Right.
We are like, hey, you're an artist, I'm an artist, how can we lift each other up? That's how. That's what we hope can be taken away.
Excellent. Thank Congratulations.
You. Thank you, bro. Thank you, Brian.
Because of the fact of the subject being Atlanta, it was definitely an engaging documentary for me. And music, and I really loved watching it. And it was really quite terrific. And so it was one of my favorites of the festival. It was one that I enjoyed watching, and it's available on AJC.com. You can watch it there. And I really recommend, if you're interested in hip hop, if you're interested in the Atlanta music scene at all, it's worth checking out. The last day of features I ended up having was that Sunday. And it was another day of documentaries. Sundays were kind of documentaries day for me. And the first one was a really lovely one called Piano Man, which looks at an immigrant who has taken it upon himself to start a business restoring and tuning pianos, and what starting that business has done for his personal life, and in particular his marriage and the stress that it's put on his marriage. And it's really a lovely film. It's only 52 minutes, and I really enjoyed it. The last film that I saw as part of the live in-person part of the fest is Yance Ford's Power. This was the other film that I was talking about when it came to the body politic, where this one looks at the history of policing in the United States. It's on Netflix right now. And it shows us how the history of policing is often rooted in two other things, that being white supremacy, and which is not a surprise to anybody at this point, or shouldn't be a surprise to anybody at this point, as well as economic supremacy and maintaining the economic power of white people. And it is 85 minutes. It's a really powerful look at policing. It is a bit on the dry side, and it certainly cannot cover everything, but I think it does a great job of putting us in a position where we cannot help but be upset at what we've done and what we've done to perpetuate and really kind of allow the police state, and at least in terms of what white people have done to perpetuate the police state that we're currently in. And it's funny because it what was interesting was Yance Ford, as well as a few other producers and activists, were at the festival, and the Q&A went on very long. I ended up not being able to stay for all of it because of the fact that it was getting late and I had to work the next day. But it was really a it was really quite a journey of watching this film. And I had a chance to talk to Yance Ford before the screening, and here are those thoughts. Thank you very much.
You're okay.
And thank you for bringing this film to the Atlanta Film Festival. It's great to have it here. I'm looking forward to watching it. Were there any particular challenges that you felt like you were up against when it came to making this film?
You know, I think one of the challenges was that we were still, you know, in the tail end of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had to, instead of going to where people were, we brought everyone to New York. Because you'll see that the background of the interviews, they're kind of uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to sort of just make the backdrop of where everyone was less noticeable. So we created a palette just of texture and color that we used for everyone. So that was one challenge. Another challenge was really finding the voices of abolitionists who were willing to be in the movie. I think many abolitionists have rightfully been unhappy with the way the media has portrayed their analysis of policing.
Yeah.
And as such, don't really trust the media to get it right or do it right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can send someone your previous work, you can talk to them, you know, about your intentions, but what you can't overcome is the loss of trust based on previous experience with other members of the media. So that, yeah, for me was a really difficult thing, because we wanted to include those voices in the film, and they're not as present as we would like them to be.
Mm-hmm. And I am definitely somebody who, you know, we've seen so many horrible,
yep,
examples of policing, especially now, right now, what we're seeing right now when it comes to university campuses, that it's, I have to imagine to a certain extent, because of the fact that it's a documentary form, you want to be obviously as objective as possible,
mm-hmm,
with a subject like this. How is that easy to do, or yeah, is it something that you found yourself wrestling with?
One of the things that I'm really proud of with this film is that we focused on the facts.
Mm-hmm.
Right, this film goes back 300 years into our history as a nation to uncover the origins of policing, and then to trace those origins to this sort of point of intersection, and then forward into what we now see as contemporary policing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there will be people who might want to argue with the conclusions of what can be done to fix policing.
Right.
But I don't think that you can argue with the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And so because we leaned into the facts, I feel really confident that regardless of someone's political viewpoint on policing, that they will come away from this film having learned something that they didn't already know.
Okay. Which actually leads me to my next question, is what is one thing that you would like audiences to take from this film?
Sure. The one thing I would like audiences to take from this film is that there is a demand that needs to be made of contemporary policing and police institutions.
Mm-hmm.
And I want people to think very hard about what demand they want to make of contemporary policing. Because we all, you know, as people who fund this institution, who are ostensibly served by this institution and who elect the people who are in charge of these institutions, mm-hmm. we have the right to demand, we have the right to demand things that are going to make these institutions work for everyone, and right now policing is not working for everyone.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Let's see. Try and think if I have anything more to ask.
I'll be around after the screening, and there's a Q&A.
Okay.
After the screening as well, so I hope you'll stick around for that.
I definitely plan on it. I mean, this is my last film of the in-person festival.
Excellent.
So I'm very much interested in seeing what you have to say with this film. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Really pretty. Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you as well.
Okay, take care.
The ways in which this ties into the body politic is obviously because it is about the subject of policing, but what was interesting during the Q&A was the fact that it was mentioned that Baltimore is one of these cities that is getting a cop city, which is basically being sold as a training center. But what really is doing is it's enforcing police brutality and ways of policing that just continue to hurt everybody. And one of the big questions in the film is what we can do to push up against this, and it's a fascinating question because of the fact that it's hard, as we've seen over the years in different protests, whether it's George Floyd, whether it's Michael Brown, whether it is what happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and what we've seen is basically it's difficult. How do you stand up and get accountability against people who are capable of terrorizing you and even killing you? And I think that is a question that, unfortunately, our political leaders, to go back to that subject, are not really prepared to deal with, or at least the leaders who are in the most power. And, one of the things that I've kind of realized over the past few months, and yes, it is a both sides issue, but at the same time, I think it's also the fact that there's one generation that's basically been in control of politics for most of my generation's lifetime, and that's the baby boomers and Gray's generation, and they have been able to maintain power and don't really want to give it up to the younger generations who want to see significant change. And I think that is even more than trying to make the argument that both sides are the same. I think that is the common equalizer, as well as money in politics, that has held back a lot of progress. And I didn't necessarily expect to get political on this one, especially since this is covering the Atlanta Film Festival, but the fact is that two of the films were highly political in nature, and it's important to talk about that. And there are also other films that had a lot to say about social issues, and one of the most interesting films I happened to watch during the virtual catalog part of my festival was a documentary called Rape Play, which is kind of an experimental documentary. It looks at fan fiction and the way that it can perpetuate negative sexual connotations, but how it also can be an outlet for healing for some people if they've been through sexual assault and the ways it can be you, the ways in which it can stunt growth when it comes to sexuality, but also help heal in unexpected ways. And I was really fascinated by the film. And it provided, it was kind of an interesting bookend to The Idea of You, which is essentially, in a way, it's a little bit of fan fiction in its own way. Because the fan fiction most discussed in Rayplay is One Direction fan fiction. And it's really kind of fascinating to see how those two kind of connected in a lot of ways. And it was really a profound movie to watch. And it was a really fascinating movie to watch as the as my festival wound down in that week of virtual viewing. Other films that I loved and really cherish after coming out of this film, this festival, the documentary Michaela's Voice, A Letter to the World, about a nonverbal autistic girl who has really struggled to find her voice, and how she is finding her voice now is, it is a beautiful documentary. It's 23 minutes. I ended up seeing it a couple of times, and each time it just moved me profoundly. The Last Black Dinosaur, which is about an off-duty cop who is shooting, who shoots a black man and has his eyes open to what that act does. And it was really, it's another film that plays with form in a way that is really fascinating to watch. Don't Wipe Your Tears, which has a couple's argument escalating to moments of profound awareness about what they've been through together. As You Are, which has a female relationship, a disabled woman and an able-bodied woman, and their shared traumas and how that brings them closer together when they share them. Other short films that I loved are The Lost Courier and Everything Goes Dark and Skettle, and The G-Spot was hilarious, and Jellyfish and Lobster and Baby Gay, 10 to 1. There were just a lot of really wonderful shorts this festival, and it was great to watch all of them. And that's kind of one what I wanted to get at as far as this podcast. I wanted to share my thoughts on some of the movies that resonated the most with me, as well as share, obviously, my red carpet interviews, and also share some thoughts that I had after some of the movies that really resonated with me most. And that's kind of what this film festival became. Even if I didn't love as many films from the festival and feel like the strength of the festival was as big as it usually is, I felt like there were a lot of great things about this festival. And it was wonderful to experience it. And I'm glad, once again, I was able to cover the Atlanta Film Festival. And I look forward to doing so again in the future. That's going to be it for this episode of the Sonic Cinema Podcast. Thank you very much for listening, as always. My name is Brian Scuttle, and I hope you continue to listen to the podcast. We're going to have some great episodes coming in the summer, and I hope you enjoy. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Ooh.